It was the next afternoon when the police cruiser pulled up in front of Wayne Manor. Dick Grayson, pack on his back, came riding up behind it on his motorcycle. Then he stared at the house and continued to stare at it. As Bruce Wayne emerged from the house, Commissioner Gordon stepped out at the back of the cruiser.
"It's good of you to take him in," said Gordon, with no preamble.
Dick walked past Gordon, still awestruck by what he was seeing. In the foyer, he looked around in undisguised amazement. From the other direction came Bruce Wayne's trusted butler.
"Welcome, Master Grayson. I'm Alfred."
"So, how you doing, Al?" Bruce shrugged at the butler and turned to Dick. "We prepared a room for you upstairs, but maybe you'd like to eat first." Dick watched out the window until the police cruiser carrying Gordon was safely out of sight. Then he turned to them and said, "Okay, I'm out of here."
"Excuse me?" said Bruce.
Dick shifted the pack slightly on his back. "I figured telling that cop I'd be staying here saved me a truckload of social service interviews and goodwill. So, no offense, but see ya. Thanks."
"Where will you go? The circus is halfway to Metropolis by now."
"I'm gonna go get a fix on Two-Face," said Dick matter-of-factly. "Then I'm gonna kill him." Wayne endeavored to take the flat pronouncement in his stride.
"Killing Two-Face won't take the pain away. In fact, it'll make it worse."
Dick looked at him with open skepticism. "Look, spare me your sermons, okay? I don't need your advice or your charity." As Dick began to mount his motorcycle, Wayne said serenely, "Well, good luck." Then, struck by an afterthought, he said, "Oh, you might want to fill up in our garage. No gas station for miles." Dick stared at him for a moment. "What the hell? Why not?" He rolled the bike toward the garage. The door rolled up to reveal 5 vintage automobiles. A Rolls, a Bentley, a Spider, and 2... good Lord, 2 Turners. Beside them, he saw another array of vintage crafts lined up. Motorcycles, a BMW 950, a Kawasaki Razor, and a Harley Mongoose. "Oh, man," was all he was able to get out.
"I've been looking for someone to restore them," Bruce mused. "Too bad you're not staying around."
At that moment, Alfred walked into the garage carrying a tray stacked with London broil, baby potatoes, and greens. And it was that precise moment that Dick Grayson knew he was utterly outmatched. "Well, maybe I'll stay just a couple of days," said Dick.
That evening, the bat signal burned the sky over Gotham City. The Batmobile glided to a halt several blocks away from police headquarters. Batman eased himself out, then stepped away from the vehicle. "Shields," he said, and heavy-duty shields slammed into place. He walked to the base of the building, pulled out his grappling hook, and fired it skyward. Pressing the retractor, he was hoisted upwards, joining the shadows of the city's sky-high spires. He made his way across the roofs toward the roof of police headquarters. Someone was standing on the other side of the spotlight itself, staring towards the sky. He leaped over to the roof of police headquarters and landed silently. He moved slowly through the shadows. The rooftop had plenty of gravel on it. It made no sound under his feet. He heard a low sigh from the waiting individual and knew it immediately. He said in a slightly ironic tone,
"Commissioner Gordon?"
Dr. Chase Meridian turned with a start. Her breath came out in mist through the chill night air. "He's at home. I sent the signal."
"What's wrong?"
"Last night, at the circus, I noticed something about Dent. His coin. He's obsessed with justice. It's his Achilles heel. It can be exploited."
He couldn't believe it.
She was telling him nothing new. Hell, she had to know it was nothing new. It was in the case files. He stepped in close to her, his voice rough, his manner intimidating.
"You called me here for this? The bat signal is not a beeper."
She didn't back off. Instead, she took a deep breath and said in a rush, "I wish I could say my interest in you was purely professional. What is it about the wrong kind of man?" she asked wistfully. "In grade school, it was guys with earrings, college motorcycles and leather jackets. Now black rubber."
"Try a fireman. Lester, take off."
"I don't mind the work. Pity I can't see behind the mask."
He paused.
We all wear masks.
My life's an open book. You read? He looked at her eyes, at the amusement there. He said,
Where do you think this is going to go?
Depends. Where are you going to take me? He took her rather ungently by the wrists.
Am I just another specimen? Another lab animal for your maze? Or perhaps you thought of bringing me home to meet the folks? In case you haven't noticed, I'm not the kind of guy who blends in at a family picnic.
We could give it a try. I'll bring the wine. You bring your scarred psyche.
You are direct, aren't you?
He squeezed her wrists more tightly. She didn't flinch. You like strong women. I've done my homework. Or do I need skin-tight vinyl and a whip? He wasn't certain how their mouths had drawn as close as they had, but he was suddenly very aware of their proximity and her warm breath against him.
I saw the beacon. What's going on?
Batman's head snapped around as he saw Commissioner Gordon standing by the roof entrance. Gordon looked from one to the other, puzzlement slowly turning into suspicion.
Nothing,
Batman told him, turning away from Chase.
False alarm.
Are you sure? Asked Chase. He didn't even glance back at her as he leaped onto the adjoining roof, the shadows welcoming him back within their embrace. The Batmobile streaked along the aqueducts extending through the cityscape of Gotham. Flared arches supported one roadway over another. And behind one set of arches, Two-Face lay in wait. As the Batmobile shot past, Two-Face spoke into a microphone, alerting the other cars.
Gentlemen, start your engines!
And two cars roared from side entrances. Each was painted red and black. They moved so quickly that their undercarriages scraped along the asphalt, sending up sparks as the cars tore after the Batmobile. In the Batmobile, an internal warning system began to beep. One or more vehicles had been detected as moving too quickly and too directly towards Batman to be considered mere other traffic.
Tactical.
Flashing graphics of the Batmobile and the pursuit cars winked into life on the windscreen. Suddenly, two more snapped into the picture as well. Cars pursuing him in a two-by-two formation. He cut hard to the left, skittering across two lanes to an off-ramp. And then, in a maneuver that most routine observers would have termed completely insane, the Batmobile veered off and plowed straight through the guardrails. The Batmobile shot through the air, tires spinning, engine roaring. It landed on a rooftop with two distinct thuds. The car roared past chimneys, across the rooftop, so close to one another that it was as easy as driving on the salt flats. With any luck, this getaway would put a quick end to the pursuit. A moment later, he heard the familiar clattering of bullets ricocheting off the Batmobile's armored hide. Batman wasn't particularly concerned about his own welfare. Nothing short of a surface-to-surface missile was going to put a dent in the Batmobile, but the flying bullets might blast through a window somewhere. He didn't need some sleeping 3-year-old getting a bullet that had bounced off the impregnable Batmobile. The situation was quickly in danger of becoming moot, however. Directly ahead was a big, fat, dead end, the wall of a giant building. From the pursuit cars emerged oddly shaped cannons, which instants later discharged their payload. Massive fireballs blossomed forth like lethal flowers. They roared towards the Batmobile. Within the cockpit, Batman hit a button on the dash. A tiny hood hatch blew off, shooting a bat grapple high into the air. The grapple grabbed the wing of a giant stone gargoyle atop the roof of the building. A powerful hood winch was activated, and the Batmobile was jerked vertical. He drove the powerful car straight up the side of the building. The two foremost cars slammed into the side of the building, arriving just seconds after the fireballs they launched. A second later, the ruptured gas tanks fed the fireballs, inflating them to massive proportions. The drivers were thrown clear. Two-Face's armored vehicles skidded to a halt. Two-Face stepped out, and surrounded by licking flames, screamed his rage into the night. In the stone bowels of an ancient support arch near the Gotham Bridge, Two-Face stewed in his hideout. The decor of the place was suitably unique. It was split right down the middle. On the left half, the decor was extremely cheerful, upbeat, with a look and style that seemed right out of a 1950s sitcom. On the right side, everything was black. black leather stretched over black metal, and harsh lighting flickered overhead. On each side of the room there was a woman preparing a meal. The former was sugar, the latter was spice. They were identical and dressed according to the theme and mood of the respective rooms.
"I've prepared your favorite, mon cher,"
cooed Sugar.
"Quail eggs and aspic."
Two-Face rose and examined it approvingly.
"Foie gras. Excellent."
With a disdainful sniff, Spice called over,
"Liver. Don't make me puke."
The girls nodded towards each other, the little game following its usual course. They moved the two tables together, and Harvey sat at the head, and a voice from the dark said,
"I hope you made extra."
Two-Face was on his feet immediately, shoving the table away and pulling out his twin Colts.
"Who the hell?"
"Just a friend, but you can call me..."
The figure stepped out into the light, slowly, so as not to spook the man who had two guns on him. Two-Face squinted in confusion. He was faced by a gangling individual clad in a lime-green leotard covered with question marks, and he was leaning on a cane with a large question mark for a handle.
"The Riddler,"
he said, after a suitably dramatic pause. The Riddler then moved quickly. The moment he had entered, he had seen the twin TVs on either side of the room.
"Have you seen the latest program?"
He directed the comment to Sugar and Spice. Automatically, they both glanced at the TVs, and as they did so, he pressed a stud on the head of his cane. The television sets glowed green, the pictures vanishing, and white beams arced out of the sets, spearing straight through Sugar and Spice's heads. Two-Face stared at them, not understanding what he was seeing. He merely watched, transfixed. The Riddler reached for his jacket and removed a receiver from it. He held it out invitingly.
"This is how I found you. Take a hit and see. It makes one smarter."
Two-Face considered it a moment, bringing the receiver up to his head experimentally, and the world was suddenly open to him. The Riddler pointed at Sugar and Spice, who were still mesmerized, and then at Harvey.
"This is your brain on the box,"
he said to the former.
"This is your brain on their brain."
Then he pulled the receiver away from Two-Face, who gasped at the separation. Slowly, Two-Face's eyes refocused. He grabbed for the receiver, but the Riddler easily kept it out of his reach.
"More,"
he said in a strangled voice. The Riddler waggled a finger at him.
"Oh, there's more. But only the first one's free. Here's the concept, Counselor. Crime. My IQ, your AK-47. This is the bargain. You will help me gather production capital so I can produce enough of these."
He held up the box. It was in the shape of a stylized question mark with a glowing light in the bottom dot.
"Enough of these to build an empire that will eclipse Bruce Wayne's forever. And in return, I will help you solve the greatest riddle of all. Who is Batman? Then we'll find him and kill him."
Two-Face eyed the Riddler, interest dawning.
"An intriguing proposition."
He pulled out his coin.
"Clean side, we take your offer."
And then he placed the barrel of one of his guns against the Riddler's temple.
"Scarred side, we blow your head off."
The Riddler licked his lips, which were suddenly dry. And as the coin arced through the air, he said what might very well be his last words.
"Don't rule out the concept of 2 out of 3.
In the Gotham Jewelry Exchange, Two-Face's thugs were hurriedly scooping out handfuls of gems from glass cases and shoving them into bags. Nearby, the Riddler and Two-Face stood over a pallet of black jeweler's felt, which was littered with bright, sparkling diamonds. Two-Face grabbed the pallet and upended it, pouring the diamonds into a loot bag. As the bat signal flared in the sky, the party moved across town. In the Gotham casino, the guards were struggling with Two-Face's thugs, but they were sorely outnumbered. Batman's eyes narrowed as the sign, "Crime in Progress," flashed on his tactical screen. Something seemed a little off, but he couldn't take the time to figure out precisely what it was. He had the feed from police headquarters, and that was all he needed. The Batmobile rolled up to the service entrance of the building where the crime was reported. Batman wasted no time charging up the stairs and smashing through the door. There was a collective shriek from within. Batman stood in the middle of the curl-up-and-die beauty salon, which was open late since it was Friday. He looked around for the source of the disturbance. The women didn't seem particularly upset. After their initial astonishment, both beauticians and customers started babbling excitedly, crowding in around Batman, laughing and flirting. Behind his mask, Batman fumed. He wasn't certain which annoyed him more, that he had not gotten his hands on his target, or the kind of field day that the media was going to have with this.
"With millions in diamonds, cash, and personal effects stolen," said the newscaster, "while bizarrely Batman chose to make an appearance in a cross-town beauty parlor."
With the late morning sun flooding in through his window, Bruce Wayne adjusted his tie while the morning news aired. He shook his head as the newscaster continued.
"Witnesses clearly identified Two-Face as the perpetrator and mastermind behind the robbery. However, this station has learned exclusively that Two-Face has a new partner who phoned earlier with the following message."
A graphic of a question mark appeared on the screen as the Riddler's voice crowed.
"Blame Two-Face? I demand equal acclaim for my offense, recognition for my wrongdoings, credit for my crimes. Gotham has a new bad boy in town, and his name is the Riddler."
The newscaster came back on, adding,
"It would seem that Two-Face has now decided, appropriately, that two heads are better than one."
Alfred entered Bruce's bedroom carrying coffee and the morning mail. Bruce turned to him and said, "I knew scrambling the downlink to misdirect me to the beauty salon was too sophisticated for Harvey alone." Alfred shook his head.
"A madman calling himself the Riddler. Riddles delivered to Bruce Wayne. Apparently you and Batman have a common enemy, sir."
Bruce glanced at the butler, only listening with half an ear as the newscaster continued.
"On other news, entrepreneur Edward Nigma has signed a lease for Claw Island. Nigma says he plans to break ground on an electronics plant."
And there was Nigma, holding up sketches of what his fully refurbished Claw Island would look like. Bruce Wayne barely gave it a glance. Edward Nigma, at that moment, the farthest thing from his mind. And also, as it happened, the closest. In the combination garage and gym in Wayne Manor's West Wing, Bruce Wayne found Dick Grayson pummeling a straw-filled action dummy. Dick had drawn in a face on the dummy's head, a smiley face, but there was a vertical line bisecting it. The left half of the face was smiling, while the right half was sneering, with a grossly distorted eye, mouth, and fangs. Dick paused, clearly waiting for Bruce to make some comment. This, of course, Bruce didn't do. Instead, he turned to Dick and said approvingly, in reference to the motorcycle that the teen had been working on, "I just started the Black Knight. She sounds great. Why don't you grab the Harley and we'll take a ride?" With a sigh, Dick lowered his arms from the punching position. "Look, man, I appreciate the gig, but let's leave it at that. We're not going to be buddies, okay? You don't even know me." In a very mild tone, Bruce said, "I know the pain that's with you every day. Don't let your love for your family twist into hatred of Two-Face. It's too easy. Look, no offense, man, but I don't think you've got a lot to teach me." Bruce raised an eyebrow and then stepped in front of the dummy. His two left hooks rattled the dummy with ear-shattering impact. His right took off the dummy's head. Dick gaped at the Two-Face stuffed head lying on the ground. "Don't be so sure," Bruce informed him.
"What are you going to do about him, Mr. Wayne?"
Bruce sat behind his desk, staring at Wayne Enterprises lawyer, Stu the Exterminator, Schoenfeld. Schoenfeld was an intense young man with intense black hair. "Do?" he asked, going through a variety of documents. Off to the side, Margaret, as always, was manning a phone bank. "You mean about Nigma?"
"Yes, sir,"
said Schoenfeld in exasperation. He waved documentation and memos around.
"As near as I can determine, this box he's planning to market, it's from a device that he was creating while he was in our employ."
"This is the mind control thing, right?" asked Bruce.
"With all due respect, Mr. Wayne, that's a grotesque oversimplification."
He rose and crossed over to the far wall, inserting a CD file that he'd been compiling.
"I've been keeping track of his activities over the past week, sir."
Bruce sat back and watched a time-lapse sequence of Claw Island under construction. There, Nigma now was standing in front of the main building with a huge sign that read Nigma Tech being raised into place by a crane, a sort of crowning glory.
Now you can be part of the show, Nigma was proclaiming to the press and onlookers. Nigma Tech brings the joy of 3D entertainment into your own home. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you my vision. The box in every home in America, and one day, the world. I've seen the future, and it is me.
Bruce was staring into the gaze of Edward Nigma on the screen, and as he looked at the intense desperation of nearly fanatic glee, he couldn't help but feel that his having missed connecting with Nigma was a blessing in disguise.
"Drop it, okay, Stu?" Wayne asked. He turned to Schoenfeld. "We might very well be able to take a big bite out of the box, but I don't need the money, Stu. And you know what I suspect I need even less? Extended dealings with or grief from one Edward Nigma."
"But..."
Margaret turned from the switchboard and said, "Mr. Wayne, Dr. Meridian on line two."
"Chase," Bruce said as he picked up the phone. "Good to hear from you.
I just wanted to know how Dick is doing, and for that matter, how you're doing."
He thought to himself, "Oh, he spent the past few weeks pounding dummies, punching bags, walls, anything he can do until his knuckles start to bleed, and then he starts kicking it."
"Fine," he said aloud. "Everything's fine. We're getting along great." "You're lying."
"I'm lying," he agreed. "I miss you. I'd really like our schedules to hook up, unless, of course, things have become more serious with you and the other fellow."
The line was silent for a moment.
"Chase?" he prompted.
"I don't know if serious is the right word. Strange might be more appropriate." She hesitated and then said, "Let me do some schedule juggling and get back to you."
"Sounds great," he said.
As he hung up, Margaret dropped some papers on his desk.
On top, Bruce thought he saw a leather-covered book, covered with mud and dirt, clutched to his chest, and the young man held it desperately as,
"What the?" said Bruce. Margaret leaned forward at his exclamation. All she saw was a stack of papers. Bruce rubbed his temples, smiled gamely, and waved Margaret off. And the screaming of the young man in torment echoed in his head. Chase Meridian's apartment was cramped and cluttered. After letting Bruce in, Chase had gone back into the kitchen and was now looking into a pot of boiling macaroni.
Find a spot and clear it off," she suggested. "I'll have food up in 5 minutes. I'll have you know spaghetti is my specialty," she said archly.
"How did that get to be your specialty?" he asked.
"Because I can't cook anything else."
Dick knew there was something going on, but he didn't know what. Bruce and Alfred would occasionally vanish into the mansion, sometimes for hours at a time. He wandered into the study. The place was as huge and intimidating as anywhere else in the joint, and the design was eclectic. Sky-high bookshelves, but with a grandfather clock sandwiched between two of them. Tropical fish, trophies, pictures. Pictures over the mantel. That, in fact, did catch Dick's interest. He walked over and stared at the photos. There was a kid who he guessed was Bruce as a boy. Bruce Wayne. Now, there was a strange case. It was clear there was something going on in Wayne's head, but damned if he could tell what it was. He looked around the study and confirmed what he'd suspected. There was no other exit from the place. This struck him as particularly odd, because the other day he'd been looking around the empty study. He'd walked out, but hadn't gotten 20 feet when he heard a faint clanging from within the study. He turned back and been stunned to see Alfred emerge from the room. But he hadn't been there less than a minute ago. He stared at the grandfather clock, stared particularly at the pendulum. The pendulum would have made that exact clanging noise if knocked around. Dick walked over to the clock, looking it over.
That's how I would do it," he murmured.
He opened up the glass cover and started moving the clock's hands, pushing them backwards, since, he reasoned, clockwise was the normal motion. He pushed the hands backwards to midnight, on a hunch, and then jumped back as the clock slid smoothly and noiselessly outward. Behind it was a black, darkened entrance into
what?
"Thanks again for dinner," said Bruce as he helped Chase clear off the dishes. "Also, I appreciate your help on Dick. Can I buy you a hospital wing or something?" She laughed lightly and snapped her fingers. "Oh, that's right, I forgot."
"Forgot?"
She pulled out a small gift-wrapped box and handed it to him.
"What's this?"
he said as he opened it. Inside was a small wicker doll, a dream doll. "I thought your dreams might need changing," she said.
"That would be nice."
He hesitated, and then he said, "My parents were murdered in front of me. I was just a kid." Chase nodded. Her face was carefully composed and neutral. "I get flashes in my dreams. I'd gotten used to them, but now there's a new element, one that I don't understand. A book. Leather." He paused. "The dreams have started coming when I'm awake." She nodded.
"Bruce, you're describing repressed memories. Images of some forgotten pain trying to surface. It..."
The phone rang. She moved quickly into the other room, and as she answered it, a pile of papers cascaded to the floor. He went over to help pick the stuff up and saw the first two files on top were about Batman, as were the next five. Articles, news photos, clippings, every bit of printed material known to mankind about his costumed alter ego was adorning the desk of Dr. Chase Meridian. Damn it! Damn it! Why couldn't he have the right people obsessed with the right aspects of his life? Chase sighed, hung up, and looked at Bruce, ready to turn matters back to business. Then she turned to see what he was staring at.
"Is that the other man, doctor?" he asked stiffly. "All right," she sighed. "He's fascinating. Clinically. Why does a man do..."
And she put her fingers up to the sides of her head, imitating bat ears.
"This."
Then she studied Bruce a moment and said,
"Okay, look. If you're no longer interested in discussing yourself, you want to try and help me dissect Batman? It'll be challenging. You may even find out something about yourself."
"Now that would be a treat," deadpanned Bruce Wayne. "And maybe you'll find out something, too."
Bruce Wayne is Batman.
Dick had figured it out in no time flat. If the computers, the equipment, and the entire incredible setup weren't enough, certainly the cape that Bruce left draped over a chair was a sufficient tip-off. From one of the caverns up ahead, he heard a clanking. It was the Batmobile. The hood was up, the motor humming softly as Alfred was bent over the mighty black car, making some minor adjustments to the engine. Never had Dick Grayson moved more silently than he did at that point. The cowling on the cockpit was open, and he eased himself in. He studied the dashboard. Everything was clear, easy to find, made sense. If he was in a fight, he didn't want to have to start fumbling around to find weaponry. Alfred slammed the hood, wiping his hands on a white rag he had dangling from his belt. He moved towards the cockpit at just the precise moment that Dick Grayson located the button that would slide the cowling shut. As the butler started to reach in for the purpose of shutting off the engine, the cowling quickly began to slide forward into its locking groove. With a startled yelp, Alfred yanked his arm clear and then, to his horror, caught a glimpse of Dick Grayson's grinning face.
"Don't wait up, Al!"
he called as the cowling clicked into place.
"No!"
shouted Alfred.
"Master Grayson, no! Get out of there!"
But by that point it was too late. With a screech of tires, the Batmobile hurtled away, picking up speed with every second. And for just a moment, the polished British butler vanished, to be replaced by a very unpolished and very frantic Alfred Pennyworth.
"Oh, bugger!"
exclaimed Alfred. "We'll screen some news footage first," said Chase, keying up a CD-ROM file on her computer.
"Of what?"
"Of Batman in combat." Chase brought the first footage up on the screen.
"Look at the abuse he's taking," Chase observed. "He's not just fighting crime. It's as if he's paying some great penance. What crime could he have committed to deserve a life of nightly torture?"
Bruce hit a key, blanking the screen.
"So Batman just had a lousy childhood. Is that your diagnosis, doctor?"
He started to turn away, and she grabbed his hand as if grasping a life preserver.
"Why do you throw up that superficial mask?
I want to be close, but you won't let me near.
He moved towards her, and she backed away slightly. You want to know me, Doctor? We're all two people. This side we show daylight, that we keep in shadow. She continued to back up and bumped against a wall.
Rage, violence, passion,
she whispered, and for a moment he felt himself drawing her into him. Or perhaps it was the other way around. His watch beeped at him. With a slightly strangled grunt, he stepped back and raised the watch to his face. Screen, he said, and the holographic watch face was replaced by the frowning face of Alfred. Yes, Alfred? Aware of Chase's presence, Alfred chose his words carefully.
Sorry to bother you, sir. I have some distressing news about Master Dick. I am afraid he's gone traveling.
He ran away?
Actually, he took the car.
Which car? The Jag? The Bentley?
No, sir, the other car.
Bruce closed his eyes in pain.
What's the problem?
Asked Chase. With a soft moan, he simply replied, Car trouble. In an alley of Arkham Square, the young girl ran with several young toughs in pursuit. One of them knocked her to the ground, and then blinding headlights framed them in the alleyway. They looked up in shock as the Batmobile rolled down towards them. Then the cowling slid back, and there was deathly silence as a caped figure emerged from the cockpit. He leaped down as the punk shrank back, the cape fluttering behind him. Everyone froze. Something seemed off. One of the gang kids leaned forward to the leader and whispered,
I thought he'd be taller in person.
The leader glared at the intruder and growled,
Who the hell are you?
Trying to sound ominous, Dick Grayson rumbled, I'm Batman. He took a step forward, but the cape was too long, and he stepped on one of the scalloped edges, yanking it partway off his shoulders. It revealed his less than intimidating sweater and jeans. Damn, did I forget to dress again? They closed in on him then, one of the gang members taking the lead while another swung a length of chain. Dick's hand shot out quickly, and he grabbed it away. He swung it upward, catching the low rung of a fire escape ladder, and just as another of the punks rushed him, he yanked himself into the air. He swung a kick into the punk's face, knocking him flat. With a collective yell, the others dashed off down the alleyway. Dick tossed a salute to the awestruck girl and started towards the car, and then he heard a series of shouts and screams that did not bode well. Both he and the girl turned and saw several other dozen bats coming their way. Bats of the wooden variety, being wielded by about 30 punks belonging to the same gang. Dick and the girl dashed toward the other end of the alley, which was barred by a chain-link fence. He reached for the girl and practically tossed her over. Run! He shouted as she rabbited away. Dick leaped for the chain dangling from the fire escape, a fairly good plan until more of the gang came pouring over the rooftop. He did the only thing he could. He leaped off the balcony, snagged a clothesline, and landed in the midst of the punks, hordes of them tightly packed in the alleyway. He landed on their shoulders, leapfrogging across them, trying to get to the Batmobile and safety. He almost made it. Then one of them managed to grab his foot and pull him down into the midst of the pounding mass of flesh. That was when a dark-caped figure descended from on high. He zeroed in immediately on where Dick had gone down under the bruising fists. Smoke! He called out. Responding instantly to the pre-encoded voice message of its creator, the Batmobile ejected smoke grenades out from its front launcher. Wasting no time, Batman slung his young charge under his arm and carried him to the Batmobile. By the time the smoke had cleared and the chests of the punks had stopped burning, the Batmobile was long gone. Long into the night, they were still in the Batcave. Batman chose his words with care. Dick, he said. I tried to tell Two-Face who I was. I wish with all my heart there was something I could do to change things. To Bruce's surprise, Dick said,
There is.
He paused, and then said,
Let me be part of this.
What?
It's all I think about, every second of the day, getting Two-Face. He took my whole life, but when I was out there tonight, I imagined it was him I was fighting, and all the hurt went away. Understand?
Too well.
So how do we find him?
Said Dick, as if Bruce had already acceded to his request.
And when we do, you gotta let me be the one to kill him.
Listen to me, Dick. Killing damns you. I know. All this isn't about revenge. Dick glanced at a framed headline over Bruce's desk. It carried the story of the murder of Bruce's parents. Right. Save the speeches, Bruce. You want to help me? Train me. Let me be your partner.
No.
Dick eyed Bruce with anger born of pain. You said we're the same. Well, you were right. I'm going to be a part of this, whether you want me to or not. He stormed out, and Bruce watched him go, feeling a lot older. The red carpet had been rolled out for the night at the Ritz-Gotham Hotel. A banner was draped across the front that read, Nigmatech, Imagine the Future. At the curb, folks poured from luxury cars. A battalion of valets scurried about. Bruce stepped out of his Bentley and assisted Chase. Dick vaulted over the back of the car. The hotel was a hive of activity. A band was playing and couples were dancing on an elaborately decorated dance floor. Lining the walls were curtained show booths. Partygoers were being invited to step in and sample the new box. Bruce, Chase, and Dick headed down a large staircase to the center of the ballroom.
"Gotham High Society," said Dick unenthusiastically. "I'm excited."
Reporters pressed in close to Edward Nigma. Photographers were snapping pictures, and an avid society writer was tossing questions at him. Suddenly, she spotted a new arrival and called his name.
"Oh, there's Bruce Wayne! Brucey!"
Edward stiffened slightly. Before Wayne could get a word out, Edward had draped himself around Bruce's shoulder.
"Bruce, old man! The press was wondering what it feels like to be outsold, outclassed, outcoiffed, and generally outdone in every way."
Bruce Wayne merely smiled. "Congratulations, Edward. Great party." Edward continued,
"How humiliating my success must be for you. There you were, a real genius, and yet you couldn't recognize my own. Come, let me show you what could have been ours together."
A woman was just stepping into the first booth. She moved in like an astronaut stepping into a capsule, but everyone turned to watch her on a monitor where she was turning and looking down in amazement. She was covered in glittering jewels.
"My new improved box offers fully interactive holographic fantasies," said Edward. "It's real because they believe it to be real. An end to mundanity. Out of the darkness, Nigmatech brings you a life better than life itself." He gestured ahead. "Go ahead, try it. Step through to the other side."
"Edward," Bruce said slowly, "if you can introduce images into the mind, what keeps you from drawing images out of the mind?" Edward sneered.
"Too timid to try my machine? Say so."
He smiled graciously at Chase.
"If such cowardice before so fair a lady doesn't embarrass you, shall we dance?"
Chase was about to refuse, but then she noticed that Bruce, with a subtle nod of his head, was indicating that she should. Obviously, he was interested in her assessment of him, so when Nigma scooped her up in his arms, she did nothing to resist. And now, looking around at Nigma's equipment, Bruce felt his curiosity piqued. He moved to what he thought was an empty, inoperative booth, and pulled aside the curtain. He stepped inside. And as he stood mesmerized in the booth, surrounded by the green glow, with a tiny white light focused on his eyes, yet another holophile was created. It was to be added to the hundreds that had already been assembled this busy, busy night. This one was labeled Bruce Wayne. A miniature schematic of the human brain appeared on a screen, and the box began its guided tour through the graphic landscape of Bruce Wayne's mind. Dick Grayson looked down contemptuously at the array of booths with people going in and out like cuckoos into clocks. Fake reality. It'll never beat the real thing. Then he saw the booths go dark all at once, and only had a second to wonder why before gunfire clattered across the room, and bile rose in his throat as he saw Two-Face swagger into the middle of the floor. Two-Face bellowed,
"All right, folks, this is an old-fashioned low-tech stick-up. Hand everything over nice and easy, and no one gets hurt."
Bruce Wayne staggered out of the booth, disoriented, operating completely on instinct. Hearing the commotion, he immediately moved towards a service entrance and shoved the door open. The moment he got outside, he located the Bentley and ducked into it. "Emergency, Alfred," he said, but the butler was already pressing a hidden button that flipped open a secret panel in the back. A bat suit was hidden within.
Dick Grayson bolted into the service kitchen. He heard the pounding of feet from both directions, the unmistakable clacking of bolts being shot home. He looked around desperately and spotted a laundry chute. He dived through it just before thugs appeared. Edward Nigma shoved his way towards Two-Face.
"You're ruining my party," he said. "Are you insane?"
He stared into Two-Face's mad eyes and said,
"I withdraw the question."
"We're sick and tired of waiting for you to deliver Batman, Riddle Boy."
Edward began to sweat.
"Patience, oh bifurcated one."
"Screw patience. We want him dead, and nothing brings out the bat like a little mayhem and murder."
At that moment, a window exploded inward. Guests ducked back, glass flying over them as Batman swung in. Glass crunched beneath his feet when he landed, and he wasted no time at all. One thug charged Batman, and he heaved him overhead. Then he moved towards a thug who was trying to grab Chase's pearls from around her neck.
"Excuse me," he growled as he head-butted the thug, knocking him cold.
"My place, midnight," Chase whispered. Batman spun and engaged another group of thugs. He yanked gas pellets from his belt and hurled them. They exploded at the feet of several thugs, and immediately those went down from the fumes. Batman pulled several small cuffs from his belt and threw them towards more thugs who were advancing on him. The cuffs homed in on them, whipping through the air and securing themselves around the thugs' ankles. They went down hard. Batman ran in the direction that he'd seen Two-Face go. He dashed out onto the balcony and saw Two-Face and his thugs vanishing into an open manhole in the midst of the construction site across the street. Batman threw wide his arms. The glider rods snapped up, drawing his cape taut and into place. He stepped onto the railings of the balcony and leaped off, hurtling down towards the manhole at top speed. The Gotham Subway Museum was planned to be an ancillary part of the new hotel. It would be marvelous and profitable and doomed. Work on the station had already begun. Half the station had been washed down, repainted, and retiled. The other half was still dank, dirty, and disgusting. Crouching on the tracks below, Two-Face felt right at home.
"Boys, welcome our guest."
Upon the command, the thugs hoisted a translucent red plastic industrial air conditioning tubing, its maw precisely matching the diameter of the open manhole. Batman folded his wings just as he arrived at the manhole, plummeting straight in, feet first. He only had a split-second warning that something was wrong, and in this case it wasn't enough, not even for the Batman. He plunged into the red vinyl connector, skidding into the darkness, out of control. His ride ended abruptly. He hurtled out of the tube into a blackened tunnel filled with scaffolding and supports from the work underway, and smashed squarely into a wall. Staring into the darkness of the tunnel, Two-Face grabbed an aging valve wheel set in the crumbling wall. He spun it enthusiastically and, in the distance, was rewarded with the sound of gas pouring into the tunnel. He aimed the launcher into the tunnel and cried,
"Fire in the hole, gentlemen!"
The thugs scrambled to get out of the way as Two-Face fired the launcher. The grenade slammed into the gas main, and a flaming white fireball erupted, spiraling down the blackened tunnel and searing everything in its path. Two-Face watched with rapt attention as the far end of the tunnel turned into an inferno. There were more explosions, the glorious sounds of debris falling, and no movement.
"Finally,"
whispered Two-Face. Then his smirk vanished. Rubble was being shoved aside, and phoenix-like, a caped figure was rising from it. Slowly, Batman lowered his fireproof cloak and began to move forward. Consumed with rage, Two-Face started firing wildly.
"Why don't you just die?"
he shrieked. As he spoke, rock and sand from the damaged scaffolding collapsed inward on Batman, knocking him to his knees, pouring in from everywhere. He was driven back from Harvey by a storm of wreckage. Two-Face continued to watch unblinking as the ground beneath Batman sucked him down into a quickly filling pit of sand. He managed to yank his grappling gun free from his belt, and he fired a cable into the air. For a moment, Two-Face held his breath, but then the grappling hook clattered back down. Nothing above it for it to grip onto. Sand continued to fall, entombing Batman, covering his mouth, his eyes, and finally his ears. Screeches filled his ears, and they were his own, except he couldn't speak, and he thrust a hand upward, his air running out, his life running out, like sands trickling through an overturned hourglass. His hand clutched at something, and it was air. But air was notoriously difficult to find a handhold in. A hand gripped his. It was a strong, unwavering grip. It provided him all the support he needed. He was able to dig in the toes of his boots, drive himself upward, up and out. His head broke the surface, sand pouring out of his mask and giving him visibility. He looked up. Dick was dressed in his Flying Grayson costume.
"Don't worry," said Dick through gritted teeth. "Just think of it as a day at the beach. A really bad day at the beach."